listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. The good doctor back in the seat here with Eric today, and it's a great day here, Eric, in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, it's beautiful, Mike. It's a little hot.
It's a little hot, but it's a lot better than the East Coast, where I just came back from, because it's about 90-plus degrees on the East Coast, but that humidity absolutely stifles you. It kills you. I mean, you can feel it. It's just oppressive.
I don't know. Last year I was in New York around this time, and it was nice. I don't care.
No, it's good. Well, listen, in any case, we've got a great show in store today. We do have a very special guest on the line right now. His name is Michael Rischer, and he is the staff attorney for the ACLU of Northern California. So let's get right to Michael. Michael, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me. I don't know if I'm all that special, but glad to be here.
Hey, we're all special, right? Each in our own way. So, but in any way, Michael, what I wanted to talk to you about today is there's a big story out about the police and the Supreme Court ruling that the police can now access your own DNA without a warrant, but you can't access your own DNA. So tell us what's happening there.
Well, it is a bit of a mess. As you say, this new Supreme Court ruling held 5-4, that the police can take DNA from innocent Americans, people who are presumed innocent, they've never been proved guilty in court, simply because a single police officer has arrested them for a crime. We think that this is completely contrary to the Fourth Amendment, completely contrary to the presumption of innocence. Give me one second. Let me turn down the volume on this thing, if I can.
Sure. Take your time there. But this is actually a fascinating case because it was a 5-4 ruling, and actually Antonin Scalia, who is historically one of the conservative, you know, stalwarts in the court, actually ruled with 3 of the liberal justices, and then one of the liberal justices actually ruled with the 4 conservatives. So it was a 5-4 ruling.
It's crazy, man. We're losing our freedoms by the second. One little thing at a time. I shouldn't say little thing. It's a big thing. But
well,
now
this is
losing everything.
Certainly not a little thing. States have laws like this, and this really opens the door to a huge number of police abuses, and it shows why it's important that we take a close look at these things and why political labels are not necessarily all that accurate in this area.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Michael, tell us about the Fourth Amendment. Give us sort of the thumbnail sketch of the Fourth Amendment, because that's what is at the center of this Supreme Court ruling. So give our audience the perspective of what the Fourth Amendment is, what's it supposed to do, and what's it supposed to protect.
The Fourth Amendment is supposed to protect us against unbridled police power. It prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures. And until yesterday, the rule was that when the police want to collect evidence of a crime from an American, they needed to either get a warrant, which has to be supported by probable cause to think that the search will actually reveal something, or they have to point to an exception to the warrant requirement. Usually there's an emergency, for example, that allows them to collect evidence of a crime without going through the process of getting a warrant. And this has been the law for decades. It's designed to make sure that before the police invade our privacy, they run it past the judge first. It doesn't take them very long. All they need to show is that there's a reasonable possibility that their search will actually uncover evidence of a crime, and it's not some sort of fishing expedition.
Right.
Yesterday's opinion really throws that out the window, at least in this situation.
Now, let me ask you this. From my reading of the literature out there today, it sounds as though, at least they said in the short term, that the law enforcement officials can collect DNA from anyone who's accused of either a violent crime or a burglary. Are those, in the short term, the only two particular instances where this rule applies, or is it much more far-reaching?
Well, it's very difficult to tell from the opinion. Those are the only cases that were crimes that were covered by the Maryland law. However, laws in other states and the federal law are much, much broader. Here in California, the law applies to anyone arrested for any felony. That can include simple drug possession. It can include joyriding. It can include entering a shop, a store with the intent to steal something of very minor value. The federal law is even broader. It applies even to misdemeanors. So somebody, for example, arrested for walking his dog without a leash on federal land could be arrested and have to give a DNA sample for that. That seems crazy. That seems unreasonable. There's no reason that people who are arrested for walking your dog without a leash should have to give their DNA to be analyzed and uploaded into this enormous criminal database and maintained essentially forever.
No, that sounds definitely far-reaching. Sounds like the Big Brother state. Is it really upon us? I mean, is George Orwell, are his predictions coming true?
Well, it's a couple of decades past 1984, but technology is doing incredibly beneficial things in our lives. It's an incredibly powerful tool. And DNA evidence is an incredibly powerful tool and an important one in the criminal justice system. But with any powerful tool, you have to make sure that it's being used properly, because power tools can be dangerous. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court has really opened the door to the overbroad use of DNA collection. And it's something that threatens our rights, it threatens our genetic privacy, it can have real-world consequences for people being in these databases. They might be implicated in crimes they had nothing to do with. And it's something that we need to stop it here. Justice Scalia specifically, and this is very unusual, said that the court should overrule this opinion. It's very unusual to have that in dissent. At the very least, we are hoping that the court will not go any broader and will not want to approve laws like California's that apply to somebody who's accused of joyriding, or the federal law that applies to someone accused of walking their dog in the park without a leash. And also, those laws are different from the Maryland law because they apply even when people have never been charged with a crime and never gone in front of a judge. The Maryland law involved, only allowed the police to actually do anything with that DNA once someone had actually been charged with a crime and had gone in front of a judge and the judge had found probable cause to think that they might have committed a crime.
Right.
Other laws don't have those procedural protections.
Let me ask you this, Michael. What about Justice Anthony Kennedy? Because in a previous Supreme Court ruling, he actually touted the DNA's, quote, unparalleled ability both to exonerate the wrongly convicted and to identify the guilty, end quote. So what about that, the opportunity? Because you often hear about people who have been unjustly accused of a crime. You just saw about the Memphis Three. You know, that was in the news and the big documentary. What about the ability for DNA samples to exonerate those who are innocent and wrongly convicted?
There's absolutely no question. DNA evidence, DNA sampling, DNA science can exonerate the innocent. It's done that incredibly well. However, to use that as a reason to uphold this program is nonsense. This
Right.
has nothing to do with exonerating the innocent. Innocent people who are exonerated through DNA go through a simple process. There's a sample taken from the crime scene. There's a sample taken from the innocent person, which can either happen with a warrant. And it's important to remember, in any case where there's crime scene DNA evidence, the same probable cause that allows the police to arrest somebody for that will allow them to get a warrant to take DNA from that person they've arrested. So in any case where there's DNA evidence involved, the police can and do get a warrant to take DNA from the person they've arrested. They can compare that sample with the sample taken from the crime scene. If it doesn't match, if there's semen recovered from a rape scene and it doesn't match, well, you've got your exoneration. You don't need a data bank. You don't need a law to force somebody to give that sample, because even if the police, for whatever reason, don't get a warrant to take a DNA sample, that innocent guy
Right.
will say, it's not me. Here's a DNA sample. I insist that you test it. This law does nothing to do that. In fact, it gets in the way because it clogs up our labs with all of these samples taken from innocent people. And so it slows the entire process down.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, listen, Michael, thank you so much. It's Michael Risher. He's staff attorney for the ACLU of Northern California. You can check out the website, www.aclunc.org. Michael, thanks a lot for your time today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Okay, we appreciate it. Back in a moment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, broadcasting from 1480 KPHX, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. The good Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today. Let me give you the number for the Freedom Lines right now, because throughout the remainder of the program, Eric, we like to keep those Freedom Lines open and let the people have their say.
Yes, absolutely.
And we don't care if they're from the left or
the right.
They
deserve to have that.
They deserve to have their say. So the number is 1-866-987-THOM. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466. We'll be taking your calls very shortly. But just to give you a little preview of some of the things that we want to accomplish today and talk about, because in the news, Eric, I'm sure you heard of this just yesterday. We saw the little magazine there for Liberace with Matt Damon and Michael Douglas, but he is now gone on record, and his publisher is backtracking a little, although I don't know why. But as you know, he had a bout of throat cancer, and he was out of commission for some time getting therapy. I assume he got chemotherapy, maybe some radiation.
I'm sure he had the best treatment possible.
I'm sure he had the best treatment possible. From all my understanding, he's now cancer-free, at least at this particular time. But he was giving an interview with one of the British one of the British newspapers.
Media,
yes, exactly. They're not all tabloids in Britain, right?
No.
They do have credible.
They're not all National Enquirer.
No, absolutely not. So he was being asked about his cancer, and he said something to the effect, not to get too specific, but he got it from oral sex, from cunnilingus, is what he said. So that created some type of firestorm.
Isn't that what that politician said a while back?
Well, yeah, about oral sex and cancer.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, in any case, I understood as a physician what he was talking about, because the human papillomavirus, also known as HPV, it has many, many different strains. There's like different subtypes of the papillomavirus. Like, for instance, certain numbers, they assign them numbers like HPV 3, 17, 19, et cetera. And certain of those subtypes are predisposed to cause, say, cervical cancer
right.
in women. Other types could cause anal cancer. Other types can cause throat cancer. But, and this is a discussion we can have a little bit later, but his publisher then went on to say, well, no, that's not exactly what he said, trying to make it as though, well, no, you can't get cancer, throat cancer, from the HPV bug, which is not true. You can get cancer from that. So that's out there in the news. This comes on
But how does he know that?
What's that?
That he got cancer from that.
Well, he doesn't know that for sure, but that's... Well,
he's just very prolific, and he thinks that's the cause?
Well, he could. Well, I'm sure he was prolific, but it also is associated with alcohol use, excessive alcohol use, and smoking.
And he's a smoker.
And I think he wasn't he a drinker, too? I don't know exactly. You're sure? I'm not sure, but...
Anybody in Hollywood is.
Yeah, so, I mean, those are probably more likely causes of throat cancer, but... They're saying now that if you look at it...
By the way, I was joking. Not everybody in Hollywood is.
Yes, yes.
Because I know somebody's going to get mad at me for saying that.
But they're saying now that with the new cases, the newly diagnosed cases of throat cancer, they're seeing a lot of them associated with the human papillomavirus. So this comes on the heels of just, you know, a month or so ago, a few weeks ago, with Angelina Jolie talking about how she had the BRCA gene and she had a higher probability of perhaps getting cancer, breast cancer, in the future. So she opted to go with a double mastectomy in an effort to prevent her from getting cancer. So these kind of healthcare issues are out there. They're in the news. And, you know, when a celebrity brings it to the limelight, I think it really generates a lot of public discussion. And I think that's a good thing, Eric. I think it's good that the public actually is discussing these particular issues, whether it's breast cancer, whether it's throat cancer. If these celebrities can use their status, their celebrity status, to heighten the awareness and act as a catalyst for people either, you know, for or against or to offer differing opinions, that's not a bad thing, actually.
Well, you know, Angelina's pretty good at that. She's done everything from, like, you know, adopting kids from other countries who were parentless,
sure.
You know, all that stuff. And so she's always bringing out some good stuff.
No, absolutely. So this is what I like about the celebrities bringing these particular issues up. So we could talk about that at some point during the program, about the human papillomavirus and its association with various types of cancers, not just oral cancer or throat cancer, but also cervical cancer.
My mother has breast cancer.
Yes, you were telling me about that. So these are big issues in the news. But the other issue is the medical marijuana issue, Eric. I don't know if you heard about that. That's back in the news again, how there's a poll out there about medical marijuana, and the majority of the doctors polled, there's about 78% of doctors internationally and about 76% of doctors in the United States, when they were asked if they had a fictional patient, a 68-year-old woman with deteriorating cancer, would they or would they not prescribe medical marijuana to
would
treat
you?
Her.
You're a
I would, yes. I would be in these almost 80% of the doctors who would. And I think it's appropriate. I mean, it's look, bottom line is marijuana is a chemical, just like anything else, okay?
But it's natural. It's not synthetically created.
It is natural. It's a natural chemical, but the bottom line is drugs, all drugs are, just so everybody, I know there's a lot of politicization of drugs, but when you really look at it and you filter it all down, Eric, all it is carbon atoms and hydrogens and oxygens and nitrogens and sulfur and all arranged in a Lego-like fashion in different 3D conformations that gets into your bloodstream, affects certain receptors, and does certain things to your physiology. It's just chemicals. That's all they are is chemicals. Whether you're talking about marijuana, it's the same thing. It's got carbon and hydrogen and oxygen.
Don't you think something naturally grown is better than something synthesized?
Not necessarily. I mean, snake venom's natural. I mean, I wouldn't go in injecting it in people.
True, but I'm just saying there's a lot more side effects from synthesized drugs.
Well, there could and there could not
be. I mean,
be.
We talked about that before, all the side effects from these drugs.
Well, we were just talking to offline about Monsanto and the genetically modified organisms and things like that. But look, the bottom line is this, is that if we know through science that a particular chemical has a salutary effect on your health and it has a beneficial effect on your health, then it shouldn't be in the realm of politics. No. But we could talk about that offline. Eric wants to talk about some personal stuff, but we'll do that offline. But the bottom line is we should take that out of the realm of the politicians and leave it to the scientists. Leave it to the doctors like myself who understand this. We do research. We do controlled studies. We have people who sign up for these studies, and we have placebos, and we have the other group that actually takes the drug. And then we look at it over a period of time, and then we collect data, and we collate that data. We analyze the data, and then we determine whether or not these drugs are safe or they're not safe. And it's amazing when you look at this whole medical marijuana issue, because some of the opponents are like, well, we don't really know the side effects of these drugs. Do you I have three commercials that I'm going to play for you today, and we've done this before, about the side effects. Unbelievable, the side effects of FDA approved drugs being sold in a $1 billion profit industry in this country as we speak.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. The Freedom Lines are open at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's get to the callers right now. Let's go first to Dave. He's calling in from Humboldt County, California on KGOE. Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike, good to be hearing you again. I'm also Bertrand Russell in the Tom Hartman chat room, and I am no longer much of an optimist when it comes to our human rights, the overall direction. I see today a government that is no longer so much in the business of trying to represent the interests of us, the people, but rather a government that's quite corrupt, very much with a handout, finding ways to rip the people off and to try to get away with all kinds of craziness. I see them controlling electronic voting and getting themselves in power without really needing to please the people to get themselves elected or reelected. So
right.
It's all troubling me.
What did you think about, Dave, the opening segment we had with respect to the Supreme Court ruling, the 5-4 ruling, saying that indeed you could take someone's DNA swabs from their buccal mucosa in their cheeks, in their mouth, and use that and put that into a DNA database, even though you have not yet really been convicted or necessarily accused of a serious crime?
Well, I have very much mixed feelings, and I try to explain it that if I felt that our police, and there are police that work for the government, really, they're appointed, their heads are appointed by governments, that if they were seriously in the business of trying to fight crime, I would want to give them every power that would be reasonable to do that. But I no longer see that. I
right.
see them as trying to contain, restrain, deny citizens their rights to assembly, deny us the rights of free speech, try to make us powerless, take away unions, take away our ability to stand in front of the courthouse with a candle. They're doing that to us.
Now, there seems to be a definite oppression of our freedoms and rights. Well, Dave, thank you for the call. Let me get to some of the other people and see what they have to say. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. They want to know what we're doing at all times. That's what they want.
Well, I know. And the funny thing is that you often, especially conservatives, they talk about freedom, keeping government off your back. But it always seems that when it comes to limiting the freedoms and getting government on your back, they're the ones behind all these things.
Right.
I mean, it's usually this 5-4 ruling was a majority conservative rule.
Of course.
That allows, you know, law enforcement to, in essence, swab your cheek and take your DNA, even if you're not necessarily accused of anything serious. Like Michael Risher said, if you had a lower felony, it's, what do you have, like six felonies, right? Class one to class six, and class six is what? The least one. So
I happen to know that personally, not because of myself, but.
Right. But like, so class one is a very serious felony, but class six could be something like with possession of drug paraphernalia or, like you said, not walking your dog on a leash or something like that. Those are like just minor offenses. And I guess the question is, are we going to allow our government, in particular our federal government, when we have a Fourth Amendment, to say, look, that's enough for us to go out there and get your DNA and put it into a national database and run the national database to see if you're accused of anything else out there.
Well, just be prepared for barcodes tattooed on your body and GPS chips implanted.
It's pretty scary. Let me read to you, though. Here's what the Fourth Amendment actually says. The Fourth Amendment says, quote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable, and I think that's a key word there, unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So that's pretty explicit, and I think it's very well written, because like the key things there, Eric, are unreasonable searches. It has to be reasonable. You have to have a warrant. That warrant has to be memorialized either in oath or in writing or some way that is affirmative. And then you have to specifically in that warrant say, you know, what it is you're searching, where you're searching, who you're searching, and in essence, why. What's the probable cause?
Well, I mean, when you think about it, they're taking part of your body.
Yes, they are.
And it's your body.
Right? Right.
You know, you shouldn't have to give that up whenever they want.
And the thing is that you and I talked about off air, the ridiculous thing is that you have these people on death row who claim that they're innocent, and a lot of times the courts won't even allow them access to their own DNA.
Right.
So in other words, the state's saying, look, we're not going to pay for your DNA testing. We're not going to send it to the lab. We're not going to incur
unless
that
we
cost.
Need it.
Right, right. Unless we need it to put you to death. But if you want to use that to exonerate yourself, you know, we're not going to pay for that, you know, and I don't think we're even going to let you pay for it. You know, we'll determine.
We've already got you in jail and you're staying there.
Right.
That's
basically
how they think.
Right. You're guilty. And look, I saw this. My dad turned me on to this and my wife, this Memphis 3. It's like a third installation of a documentary. But this was like decades ago where these three young kids who were out in, and it wasn't Memphis, Tennessee. I think it's Memphis, Arkansas is where it is. But they were three young kids and they were arrested by the local law enforcement for these grisly crimes. It was like two kids, I think, who were killed. They were mutilated. One's genitals was cut off. They said it had to do with devil worshipers and all this nefarious stuff. They arrested these three kids, and one of the kids had like an IQ of like 70 or something. It was, you know, pretty much.
I'm looking at him right now.
Yeah, are you looking at the Memphis 3? Unable to.
Damien Eccles, Jesse, yeah. Something I can't see, and then Charles Baldwin.
Yeah, so these three guys, and it went through this incredible court case, but they ultimately were put on death row, and these documentarians follow the case every step along the way, and thank God they did, because the reason that they followed them and put this story into the limelight, it forced the courts to take a hard look and not execute these kids. And then recently, I believe they were exonerated. But what ended up happening is one of the fathers of one of the kids who actually was killed and who kept calling for the death penalty in these kids and calling them, you know, scum and, you know, just devils, and they needed to be put to death.
Well, he was just convinced they did it.
Well, what happened was I think it was the Dixie Chicks were out there and they were trying to call attention to this particular case. And in it, they mentioned this kid's father, and he kind of took what they had to say is defamation to his character. So he sued the Dixie Chicks for like, you know, millions of dollars and whatnot. He's trying to get rich off of it, of course. And what happened was he didn't realize this, but by suing them, he opened himself up to actual deposition and interrogation by law enforcement, by lawyers,
right,
to find out, well, what does he know about the particular case? And then when they started interviewing him, it was absolutely stunning because all of a sudden they had found a piece of his hair at the crime scene or somewhere near the crime scene, and it was his. It had pretty much a match to his DNA, okay, 98%+ or whatever it was, that it could have been his hair. But he claimed he had never been with the kids, didn't see the kids. And then one of the neighbors ends up testifying that right around 6 o'clock, 6:30, she saw him with the three kids. They were playing around in the neighborhood with their bikes, and he was with them.
So
but
he did it.
He claimed he never was there, that he was with a friend's house. He had an alibi and all this stuff. But that alibi fell through, and the long and short of it was now he is potentially a prime suspect. He said, oh, he's a peaceful man and this and that. Then his ex-wife, of course, testifies, and she ended up testifying that he was a violent abuser, and then there was pictures of her with black and blues and this and that, and he claimed he had never done any violence, this and that. It was a crazy case. But
was he the one with the low IQ?
Well, if you watch his documentary, I would say a lot of people in this documentary had low IQs, including the judge himself. I mean, the judge was an absolute ass in this particular documentary.
You know, but I think I saw the title on Netflix, so I'll watch it.
It's an incredible, incredible story. It just transfixes you. But it gets to the heart of really what we're talking about here on both ends of the spectrum, Eric. On one end of the spectrum, you have getting your DNA swabbed from your mouth for, like he said, walking your dog without a leash. But then you have three young, innocent kids who are pretty much poor. I mean, they were all poor. It was from a very poor area in Memphis, Arkansas.
And that's what happens when you get a public defender.
Right. You have no access to good legal representation. You can't pay for it. You know, it's cronyism in a lot of these local communities like that, the backwoods down there. They just, you know, who scratches whose back, and, you know, even the public.
I think it's like that everywhere.
Yeah, well, it's probably like that everywhere. But in this case, obviously, the public defender wasn't looking out after the interest of these young kids to exonerate them because they were innocent. You know, he was in cahoots probably with the judge and the prosecution and everybody else in these small little towns like that. So it's an interesting question, this whole thing about your Fourth Amendment right, because like we said, in one case, you don't want to be cavalier about it. You don't want to be capricious. You don't want to say, oh, just swab somebody's DNA and put it into a national database, data bank for, you know, silly offenses. But by the same token, DNA has an incredible ability to exonerate those people who have been wrongly convicted. And there's the Innocence Project. You've seen hundreds of people now who have been convicted to either life terms or death row.
Spent years,
decades for crimes that they never committed. But yet we won't give them access to their own DNA to prove their own innocence. So figure that out. Go figure out, how does the Supreme Court say you could take somebody's DNA for walking a dog and not having him on a leash, but you can't take DNA for a guy who's been in jail for 20 years.
Who claims he's innocent. And has for all those years.
And wants to give his own DNA freely and willingly to say, here, take it to the lab because it'll prove to you this is not me. I didn't do this.
Man, once you're in jail, once you're in prison, you're there, and it takes so much to get out, even though you can positively prove you're innocent. It's
right.
So hard to get out.
No, and it was so sad because when you watch these kids, Eric, the kid, they said, well, weren't you more vocal? And the kid said, you know what? Damien Echols, I think it was. He said, I knew I didn't do it. He said, I couldn't. He said he was sure that in a court of law, you can't be convicted of a crime you never committed. That's why he said he was quiet throughout the case. But they took him being quiet as sort of a tacit
guilty
plea. And that obviously wasn't the case. Okay, stay with us. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Broadcasting from 1480 KPHX here in Phoenix, Arizona, Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. The Freedom Lines are packed right now, so let's get through each and every one as best we can do. Let's go first to Rennell, listening in Atlanta, Georgia, on Sirius. So, welcome, Rennell.
What's up?
What's happening?
The HPV conversation totally messed up my train of thought, but I think I'm back on track now.
All right. Well, just be careful out there.
So the DNA discussion, DNA is the new fingerprint. That's basically what it is. We provide fingerprints everywhere. It's DNA and technology combined has allowed us this new thing, and I say us being law enforcement. So it's the new fingerprint. It's not something that's going to change the scope of search and seizure or anything like that. And when you look at all of the other places you leave your DNA where we can lawfully and legally take it anyway and enter it into a database, it's a moot point.
Yeah.
So I'm
No, you bring up an interesting point, Mel, because I think what you're basically saying is that, look, if you are arrested, first of all, you have to be arrested. And when you're arrested today, I've not been arrested, so I don't know the experience, but I assume when you get arrested, you go down to the police station, you're in cuffs, they take you there, they uncuff you, and then they take your picture, right? And then they fingerprint you. Does that sound right, Eric?
I'm pretty sure that's not happening.
I've
never been arrested either.
I assume anybody who's arrested gets fingerprinted. Is that correct?
Right.
I mean,
if they take you in, they do fingerprint.
They fingerprint you. So what Rennell's saying, Eric, is that if it gets to that point where you've already been arrested, then you must have been arrested. There must be probable cause. You don't get – well, I guess
– but you don't get arrested usually for walking your dog without a leash. You get a ticket.
Right, right. So
they're going to give you – take your DNA when they ticket you.
Here's my point. Here's what I'm saying. Even now, if we want someone's DNA and they're not arrested – we put them under surveillance, and we find something that they've touched or where they've left DNA. We get it, and we enter it.
I disagree with you there, because then that would be unreasonable search and seizure. That's what the Fourth Amendment is supposed to protect. But I do agree with you.
You're in a public place. You are willing. If you're on the corner smoking a cigarette, and you throw that cigarette down, and we go get it, you've discarded it. That's your DNA. We have that.
But that doesn't mean that it's credible evidence that you can use in a court of law, because it wasn't necessarily obtained under the auspices of what the Fourth Amendment says, that you have to do that with probable cause. You have to do it with a warrant. You have to go through a judge. No. You have to go through oath or affirmation. You can't just go around picking people up. But I think you got some interesting points. I appreciate the call there. I want to try to get to some of the other callers. But look.
I disagree with him wholeheartedly.
Well, here's where I don't necessarily – I agree with a component of what he's saying. If you are arrested – look, I agree. There's six classes of felonies, okay, and with class one being the most serious felony and class six being little – ultimately can be turned into misdemeanors. Class six can become a misdemeanor very easily. But, Eric, if somebody is arrested on a class one felony or a class two felony and you are arrested and you're in – prison, why shouldn't they get your DNA at that point?
Well, listen.
I mean, what good is it to have fingerprints versus,
That's the only thing I agree with him on is that's the new
Well, that's the only thing. Yeah.
However, you if you walk in your dog on a leash, you don't get
But that's what I'm saying. Now, maybe the law should be that if it's a serious class one or class two felony.
I think it should only be for things that, like rape and stuff like that. I mean, that where you're actually.
Well, how about murder?
Murder and rape.
How about somebody burglarizes your house?
No.
No? Why not?
Because if you're a good burglar, you're probably not leaving any DNA around.
Oh, you had a hairnet, so your hair's not going to be
right.
there. So
that's how I do it.
You do it like that? No.
I put on a full body suit and a hairnet.
No, but what if somebody burglarizes your house and you get into a confrontation with him and, whatever, you pull the guy's hair, and you rip out shards of his hair and, that's there on the bed when the police arrive.
Maybe you should be able to use that too. But, not just for everything.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I agree it shouldn't be. Well, look, that's the beauty of our Constitution. That's the beauty of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, not anymore.
Well, I know. Well, that's why Michael Richler is saying that it's too broad in its scope, and that's the problem. That's what Antonin Scalia was actually saying, because Antonin Scalia ruled against it. He thought that it was writ too broadly and that it could ultimately eventuate where, you're late on your library return of the book, and now all of a sudden they're getting the librarian's getting swabs of your DNA from your mouth.
How about a DNA draft, like the military? Well, you have to go in when you're 18 and get your DNA taken. Look, or they take it when you're born.
I can tell you for sure, as a physician and understanding technology and understanding biology and understanding DNA, I agree with the other guy. This will be the ultimate new fingerprint. I mean, the fingerprint will be something sort of antiquated and, you know, still useful, because obviously if your fingerprints are at the scene of a crime, then that's very useful. But, you know, also, you know, if you have certain like I said, hair or anything that can carry an imprint of your DNA, then that's going to be useful too.
But still, I mean, just because you found somebody's fingerprints or DNA doesn't mean they committed the crime.
Look, Eric, I could cut out, you know, a lock of your hair and then just go commit a crime
and then
put your hair there and
Thanks,
say,
Mike.
Oh, it was Eric. You know, so, but your hair's receding a little, so you'll hopefully be able to avert that later.
No, it isn't.
Look at mine. I'm actually on the Tom Hartman video cam right now.
So everybody can see.
Yeah. Well, it is receding a little bit, but I still have hair, actually. When I went back to Philadelphia
for
my nephew's graduation, they were saying, oh, look at your hair. It's all turning white and gray. And I'm like, look, I'm just happy I got the hair. I don't care what color it's turning.
You can always dye it.
As long as – I would never do that.
Nor would I.
I'm not into all that kind of stuff, like dyeing your hair and Botox and – surgery, plastic surgery, lip injections, you know, pectoral implants.
Right.
You know, I just
butt implants
or removal of butt fat. You are what you are, and that's who you are, and you just be happy with that. It's a gift. It's a gift to be here. I tell people that all the time on this program. I tell people on our program locally. You know, it truly is a gift. I mean, you're a gold medal winner. You won that race.
Are we
not going to do the sperm
and
egg race again. But look, you are out of millions of sperm. You came in first place. You didn't come in second. You're a gold medal winner. Look at yourself in the mirror. Be thankful that you have the gift of life. I mean, I deal with elderly people all the time, geriatrics. I'm a hospice physician. I deal with people who are dying, have got 6 months or less to live. And let me tell you, by working in this kind of a field, you really do come to appreciate the sanctity of life and the blessedness of life and the fact that life is indeed a miracle. So just be thankful. You don't need to have society tell you what you need to look at. You don't need to disfigure yourself with all these types of surgeries. Just be who you are. Be happy. Feel blessed. Share in the joy. And just be thankful for each and every moment.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb here, hour number two, my friends. We got the Freedom Lines packed. Let me get my glasses on. Eric, I made a decision here that I had two pairs of glasses. I had the ones that I need for reading, then obviously the ones I need for far away, and it just got to be a pain in the butt
bifocals.
Switching back and forth. I didn't want to do the bifocals initially because, you know, after you look up, you have to look down.
Now you're officially an old man.
I'm an official old man now. And I think that the final straw.
I'm thinking of getting some myself.
Yeah, the final straw that broke the camel's back is when I was returning back, you know, from the East Coast recently. I left the glasses that you need to see far away in the plane. And I said, well, that's it. Now I'm just going to go out and get the bifocals and get modern. But from what I hear from a lot of people who use the bifocals, they say that it's pretty good. Once you get used to sort of the ocular muscles and the motion, that it's not so bad. Because like right now, when I'm talking to you, I have the reading glasses on, but I have to put them down at the low bridge of my nose and then look from above them to look at you.
When I'm looking at my phone for, you know, more than a few minutes, mm-hmm. I can't see far.
Right.
My eyes get focused to that.
Yeah, well, your screen is all cracked. Do you still have the cracked screen?
No. That was like 3 years ago, Mike.
Is it fixed now?
Fixed. I bought a new phone since then.
All right. Because I see so many people with cracked screens. I mean, how does it happen? They
drop the phone and see what happens.
But it looks horrible. It looks like it was an assault on the screen.
I know, but these phones cost like $500 these days. It's like, you know, when you crack the screen, you're just going to have to live with it till, you know, T-Mobile or whoever you're with gives you the discount.
So you got to do like with the cars, like where you get the insurance for the chips in your windshield and things like that.
Well, there are people who replace screens on phones, but unfortunately that costs almost as much as a new phone.
All right. Well, in any case, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now, because like I said, the phone lines are packed. I always want to get to everybody to make sure they have a chance to say what they want to say. So let's go first to Harley. Harley's on the line from Massachusetts, and let's welcome him to the table. Harley, how are you, sir?
Good, a little food for thought.
There you go. It's Harley, food for thought. It's good to hear from you, Harley.
No, I wanted to comment on the DNA swab. I think, you know, it's like anything else. I think some limitations are going to have to be made. I mean, through the courts, certain criteria, either you arrested a first or second degree felony and then DNA is taken. I don't think we're going to get an answer right away.
Yeah. Yeah, according to Michael Rischler, he was saying that, you know, this particular ruling from the Supreme Court was it's narrow, but it's also open for interpretation. So it remains to be seen. But I think, would you agree, like we discussed earlier, Harley? I mean, obviously, if you're walking your dog and it's not on a leash, nobody should get a DNA swab from that. But if it's a class one felony or class two felony, those are serious, you know, federal crimes. I don't have a problem with, you know, someone who's been arrested for that just getting the DNA on that. Do you?
Oh, no problem whatsoever.
Yeah, no problem with that. So like you said, there should be some limitations on it, but we'll see how it goes when it wends its way through the courts. So, all right, Harley, listen, nice to talk to you.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye. All right, that's Harley calling in from Saugus. Is that how you say it? S-A-U-G-U-S. It's
Saugus?
Is it Saugus, Massachusetts?
I'd say Saugus.
Saugus, Massachusetts. All right, 1-866-987-THOM. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466. If you want to jump in on the conversation and have your thoughts heard here live on the Tom Hartman program, let's go next to Tom listening on WCPT in Chicago, Illinois. Tom, welcome on board.
Yeah, I've been waiting around here. The DNA on these rape cases, where they don't have money to do that. Where are they going to get the money to do DNA on the other?
Well, you know what? It's interesting you say that because we are going to talk about the rape cases, too. I don't know if you heard.
I mean, they've got thousands and thousands and thousands of cases around the country.
Yeah.
And this case was brought up, I forgot what state it was in. Are all their rape cases cleared? And
yeah,
they know
in Maryland. You're talking about Maryland. But, no, look, here's the bottom line. As technology becomes more readily available, anytime there's a new technology at the front end of it, it'll always be expensive. But as it gets replicated and more and more people use it, then that technology becomes more widespread and the costs become minimal. So there's going to come a point, I can guarantee you, in the very near future, Tom, where not only swabbing the DNA, but if you wanted to go out and get all of your DNA sequence, your entire DNA sequence, you could get that done for pennies on the dollar, and you'll be able to basically take that to your doctor, and then your doctor will be able to put that into sort of like a computer software program and say, hey, guess what? Tom from Chicago, Illinois, he's got, you know, a 50% chance of getting cancer of the colon. He's got a 10% chance of getting diabetes. He's got a 12% chance of getting pneumonia and having complications.
That's
it's amazing.
No, that's not government.
Well, it's
if
not government.
If you want to go do it and do it yourself and get pay to do it, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But this is the government saying they're going to pay for it. So what happened to small government?
Well, that's another discussion for another day. So listen, Tom, I appreciate your call. And again, the small government, big government. Look, we're going to talk about that, too, because the military now is having a hearing, you know, the Senate, I should say. They're having a hearing about these military rapes, Eric. And you and I have spoken about this. Look, crime is crime and crime is bad. But I think rape is one of the most heinous crimes that any person can commit upon one another. If you want to talk about liberties and freedoms, we're talking about the Fourth Amendment and unreasonable search and seizure. Well, that's the ultimate violation of the Fourth Amendment in the sense that you're unreasonably searching and seizing somebody's property. You know, that's their own personal property, your body, you know, and it's a heinous
well,
act.
Well, it's kind of like that when they take your DNA, isn't it?
Well, it is, but taking a swab from your mouth is a little bit different than...
It still violates you.
It is. It does violate you, but not the sense that
a
rape does.
By the way,
yes.
Saugus.
Saugus, is that how it says? All right, Saugus. We have our intern there in the computer who actually can translate those things for us. But yeah, I mean, it's just... We're getting to a critical crossroads, but when it comes to rape, Eric, particularly in the military, it is unconscionable. It's unconscionable that military leaders and the top brass in the military have coddled the scum. And that's what I call you. Look, I have great respect for anybody who wants to put their life on the line to defend our liberties and freedom. But I don't care how good of a soldier you are. If you're in the military and you're sexually harassing somebody or raping someone, you're a scum. In my mind, you're nothing but filth.
I agree.
You're scum, and I don't care how many stars you got, how many purple stars, how many medals you got.
How many years you've been in.
How many years of service you've given to this country. You are scum, okay? And you should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law if you are raping a woman anywhere, whether it's the military or not. But
it may not necessarily be only women.
No, sure. It could be the opposite, too. A woman could rape a guy. Look, it can go either way.
I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, but in any case – so there is a culture, though, Eric, there's a culture in the military to basically protect not the victims, but to protect the perpetrators of these horrible, horrific crimes. And we know that this exists. We know for a fact that, and it's not just an isolated incident. It's not.
And why
like,
do they protect them?
Well, they protect them because that's their culture.
To keep a good name of the
To keep service? The good name of the service. And who knows? Maybe they feel as though the women are there for their taking. You know, just, you know, it's been a tough day. I fought a war. I killed a few people. I'm going to have my woman now. You know, and that's the way the military is. That's the way they're trained. They're trained to basically seize things, take things, kill things, and you know it's unfortunate, but there's some people in the military who take that too far. And look, we're going to talk about that one case. Remember back in 2005, Eric, we were talking about that not too long ago. The woman who was put in a container. Do you remember that? Let me find that over here. It was a sad case. It was a KBR. Yeah, it was KBR. I think it was Jamie Lee Jones was her name. It was back in 2005.
She couldn't do anything because she. For employment, she had to sign something.
An arbitration agreement. Yeah, right. She was gang raped. She was actually gang raped in Baghdad, and then her coworker said that, look, if you say anything, you know, you're going to lose your job. And then they put her in a shipping container for 24 hours, in a shipping container. I mean, think of this. Without food, without water, all in an effort to break her down, to break her will so that she would be intimidated, so that she would never say anything. This is the kind of stuff that happens in our military. And now they're having a hearing. They're having hearings about how widespread this is, and of the 20 or so witnesses, 18 are people in the military, and only 2 are advocates of the women and the people being raped. They stacked the deck already at the outset.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in here for Tom Hartman today. We have a special guest on the line. Her name is Colonel Ann Wright. She is former State Department diplomat and retired Army colonel, and we're going to continue the discussion we were just having with respect to rapes in the military and the Senate hearings that are being ongoing conducted today as we speak. So, Colonel, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Likewise. Well, Colonel Wright, tell us about the extent of this particular problem, because the Senate now is conducting hearings about the assaults, the rape that's ongoing in the military. From all accounts that we understand, this is not just an isolated incident here or there, but this is something that is widespread and epidemic throughout the military. And as time goes on, it's getting worse. The prevalence is actually increasing. So give us from your perspective, Colonel Wright, what's going on?
Well, we've been working on this issue for decades. There has been rape in the military extensive rape in the military for a long period of time, but getting congressional attention onto it that would then translate into the senior leadership of the military services doing something about it is something that we've really had a breakthrough in the last 2 years. And thankfully that Congresswoman Jackie Spears led the way on this, and lots of other congresswomen and men and senators now are really pushing the military. Now the military says that they estimate that probably 32,000 people in our military every year are sexually assaulted or raped while they're on military service. And trying to get the perpetrators prosecuted is one part of it, and to have an environment in the units that people know that they cannot get away with these criminal acts is something that is really striking at the heart of the military culture.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's talk about that, though, Colonel Wright, because I'm a physician, internal medicine physician, and I'm curious about, you know, what is the mindset of the military culture with respect to sexuality? Because when you look at the numbers, and I was aghast when I saw the statistic today, Colonel Wright, they said that over the last 20 years, sexual assaults in the military has steadily expanded from an average of 1 a day to 70 a day. I mean, that to me was just absolutely stunning, that statistic. What is it about the current military culture that is fostering such an environment?
Well, I think that what is happening is that women and men are now stepping forward to say what's happened to them. I think it, you know, it is a male-dominated culture. It's a culture of violence, supposed to be violence only on order and the defense of our country. But we know sometimes violent acts, people who have been involved in violent acts sometimes use violence in a much more gratuitous way after they've first been inculcated to it. And now that we're starting to really get men and women who are coming forward to say these things have happened to us, the extent of this crisis is now being known to us. It is startling. It is unbelievable in one way. Even today in today's Senate hearings, Senator John McCain said something that I never thought I would hear him say. He said, you know, people have been asking me if I had to give advice to young women and men right now coming into the military and on this issue of sexual assault, he said, it's so bad, I'm afraid I can't tell a young man or woman to join the military because we've got to get this cleaned up before I'll tell anyone to join the military.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It is a startling revelation on behalf of ours. I'm in Arizona, so we know Senator John McCain quite well, and that is somewhat of a startling revelation. What about the fact that some people are saying the Senate Armed Services Committee, Colonel Wright, today was conducting that hearing and that witnesses who are opposed, quote-unquote, opposed to reform would outnumber supporters by 18-2 and that not a single sexual assault victim was actually scheduled to testify today. Can you speak directly to the strategy of that? Because like you said, people are coming together, men and women, and you're hearing things from Senator McCain that you thought you might not have heard before. Why no witnesses today? Is that forthcoming perhaps later? And this is just to get the military on the record up front?
Well, I think it's always wise to have survivors of violence be there to reinforce to men and women whose jobs it is to fund programs that will prevent that violence. I think it's always good to have a victim, a survivor on every one of those panels. That said, we have had, thank God, in the last year, we've had a lot of panels that have had a lot of victims' voices, and that really is what has propelled the Congress to come to this hearing today, where they are now looking at 29 pieces of separate legislation on the issue of sexual assault. They're doing the markups now for the appropriations for the military budget, trying to figure out which one of these pieces of legislation they should go with. I'm always fearful when you have a top-heavy panels, when you have the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the four heads of the military services, and you don't have some of the junior enlisted people on those panels to really give the personal experience of what's going on. That's, and in some of the testimony that I heard on the radio today, I wanted to be at the hearing itself, but I had, and I am in Washington and then over at Fort Meade, Maryland with the Bradley Manning trial. But hearing it on the radio, there were, sometimes it's good to have these old, you know, the old four stars up there because they inadvertently show so well what we're up against. And
right.
Some of the comments that the four-star generals made had to be corrected by some of our women senators, to include Senator Claire McCaskill from Missouri, who is just really, really, as a prosecutor of sexual crimes in civilian life, she has really taken these boys to the doghouse.
Wow. Well, and rightfully so. Let me ask you this, Colonel Wright. Why is it, I know one of the bills that they say has a best chance of survival, if you will, that is offered by Senators Claire McCaskill, who you just mentioned, and Susan Collins, Senator from Maine, that would remove powers of commanders to overturn convictions. Why do commanders have that power to singularly overturn conviction? That doesn't make sense.
Well, apparently it's part of the history of the military that at some stage, you know, it may have been 250 years ago, where somebody figured that commanders needed to have full control of all aspects of all life of anyone that's in the military, to the extent of being able to overturn a court-martial that was done by a military court. It doesn't
right.
make a bit of sense. And
no,
the way it's been used in the last years, particularly on sexual assault and rape charges,
It's just outright wrong. Listen, Colonel Wright, I don't want to interrupt you, but we're up against a hard break. We appreciate your time, and thank you so much for your service to this great country.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, stay with us.
Yeah. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Broadcasting from 1480 KPHX in the desert here in Phoenix, Arizona, Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. And a special thanks to Colonel Ann Wright for appearing on the program and discussing a scourge that's overtaken the military, military sexual assaults. And like I said, it's unbelievable. The statistic that I read to you earlier, over the last 20 years, it's been used to be one a day. Now it's 70 a day. So that is just an astronomical number if you think about it. Every day.
Sounds
every
like a
day.
Free-for-all over there.
It is. I mean, 70 a day. That's almost like, what, 24 hours in a day? It's almost like three an hour. Every 20 minutes, a woman continuously, 24/7, 365 days out of the year, is either being sexually harassed, assaulted, or raped. That is unconscionable in today's society. And look, let me tell you something. If you look at the last election cycle, Eric, make no mistake about it. I mean, when it came down to the rape issue, the Republicans and the conservatives were completely on the wrong side of the issue. I mean, everything from, you know, hey, if a woman gets pregnant and as a result of rape, that
the
she
body knows how to take care of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you know, how to shut those things down, or it's a gift from God, or let's make lemonade out of lemon, you know, when you get raped. I mean, they're just such a cruel, callous sort of indifference, a reckless disregard to a woman's right to privacy in her own body. And I think ultimately that's why they lost the Senate races. That's why the Democrats maintain control in the U.S. Senate. But to a certain extent, I think that's why they lost the presidency as well. I think people began to see, hey, the modern day GOP, the modern day conservatives, the modern day Republicans, I mean, they're pro-rape, really, in essence. They're for a woman getting raped, and as a result, if she's pregnant, she must have that kid. I mean, look, that defies logic, Eric. That defies any sense of compassion, and people are pretty upset with that kind of world view. I don't know how anyone could be pro-rape or turn rape into, like, a positive thing. It just
to lemonade.
It's simply not the case. Well, years ago in Iraq, when we had the Iraq War and you had Halliburton and Kellogg Brown Root, the independent contractors that were affiliated with none other than former Vice President Dick Cheney, who was a CEO of one of those companies and had a major financial stake in it, they used to write these contracts, Eric. And in the contracts, in these contracts that they had with our government, the military, our government consummated these contracts with these individuals, there was a provision in the contract that basically said that if any of the Kellogg Brown Root employees were victims of workplace sexual harassment, battery, or discrimination, that they could not take that case up in a court of law, that they'd have to go through an arbitrator, and then the arbitrator, the mediator, would decide, you
works
know,
for them.
What happens? And we just heard Colonel Wright say that for years, for 250 years, the leading commander had a right to overturn even convictions. So in other words, even if the military court said, guess what, you are guilty of rape and you're going to have some incredible sanctions, the commander could unilaterally just say, let's toss it out. And that's like a king, you know. That's not a military. That's like a king. You could just overturn to do it.
Well, you know, typically when organizations police themselves, there's going to be some problems.
Right. When the cat's away, the mice will play. But so what Al Franken did, Senator Al Franken, newly minted senator from Minnesota, he decided to say, guess what? We're the ones, the government, making these contracts. And we don't want those provisions in there. If a woman is sexually assaulted or raped, she has every right to bypass the military tribunals or the military judicial system and go directly to the civilian courts. And I agree. I mean, why should we be saying to military contractors, oh, you know, if she's raped and gang raped as Jamie Lee Jones was and put in a shipping container for 24 hours with no food, no water, you know, and then you have the tribunal, you know, the mediator. Well, yeah, it was only 24 hours and it was a pretty sizable container. You had enough room to move around and, you know, you could actually, you know, relieve your bowels and all pretty comfortably. I mean, for if you didn't have any water or food, no big deal. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? You want those kind of provisions in a contract? Well, in any case, John Stewart, I saved this.
Was the shipping crate part of the contract?
What? Yes, probably. No, they included that.
You better read the fine print.
But so John Stewart, Eric, he did as much as you can in a comedy show and rape. I mean, the two seem to be sort of oxymoron there. But he did a very poignant piece on Republicans and conservatives and their viewpoints on when it comes to actually a woman being raped and the role of government versus the private sector. Now, how you twist the role of government in the private sector in the rape, only a conservative Republican would do that. I mean, it has nothing to do with private sector, has nothing to do with government or big government. This has to do with law, with criminal prosecution of scumbucket criminals who rape these poor women, okay? So this was very well done, albeit you get a few chuckles, but it's definitely food for thought here. So let's go to the tape.
As you know, former Saturday Night Live alumni Al Franken is now the junior senator from the great state of Minnesota. And slowly but surely, he's been... Really? Still that excited about it? All right. Slowly but surely, he's been acclimating himself with the mysterious ways of that great deliberative body. His first Supreme Court confirmation hearing, his first joint session address by the commander-in-chief, his first wedgie in the Senate locker room, and of course, his first legislative amendment.
Senator Al Franken proposing the Pentagon shouldn't hire contractors that make their employees agree in advance not to sue if they're raped by coworkers.
Seems like a bit of a slam dunk. Guess you want to start slowly there. How is that a loophole that needs closing?
Franken added the amendment because KBR, an employee here, a 19-year-old woman, was allegedly gang raped by a bunch of KBR workers in Iraq, then locked in a crate when she tried to report them. When finally she was freed and returned safely to the United States, she was told she could not sue KBR because of her contract fine print.
Unbelievable.
Should I bring back the chubby baby? Is that what you need?
Unbelievable.
The old "it's okay if you get raped" clause in government contracts. Got us again. Boy, I wish I had been at that contract signing. Yeah, here it is. It is your overseas transfer papers right here, inoculation verification, rape consent form, and your 1099. I'm sorry, what was the one in between the 1099 standard form? Uh-huh. And asking me that question is considered consent. Welcome aboard. If ever there was a time for the unanimous passing of an amendment, the Franken anti-government contractor rape liability bill would seem to be that.
Right.
The final vote on the Franken Amendment was 68-30. All nay votes on the amendment came from Republicans.
Nice.
I understand that we're a divided country. Some disagreements on health care. How is anyone against this?
The Congress should not be involved in writing or rewriting private contracts. That's just not how we should handle matters in the United States Senate.
No, that's exactly how you should handle matters in the United States Senate. You know what he's saying? It's not the government's business to decide who the government does business with. That's entirely your job. Go on.
Instead of eliminating arbitration, we should probably be looking for ways to utilize mediation and arbitration more in these kind of disputes.
These kind of disputes?
Disputes.
It's the best euphemism you can come up with for gang rape?
Disputes.
I suppose Jeffrey Dahmer was involved in dinner time arguments. It's gang rape! These types of kerfuffles, you know. What exactly is your real objection?
It's a political amendment, really, at bottom, representing a sort of a political attack directed at Halliburton.
Yeah, just a thought. If to protect Halliburton, you have to side against rape victims,
unbelievable.
You might want to rethink your allegiance.
Unbelievable.
But all right, you don't want to defund taxpayer money going to Halliburton because a few of their employees gang raped someone and the company won't let the victim sue. Why don't we hear from four of the senators who voted against Franken's amendment on what we should do about Acorn?
My amendment would prohibit one more penny of taxpayer money from going to Acorn.
We've got to get corruption out of any organization that's taking taxpayers' money.
Repeated abuses of taxpayer dollars allowed to occur in their name.
It's unsustainable for any member of Congress to justify the continued funding of this organization.
Acorn is not above the law.
Well, I guess it's an efficiency thing. You don't want to waste taxpayer money giving it to someone who advises fake prostitutes how to commit imaginary crimes. You want to give it to Halliburton because they're committing real gang rape. You cut out the middleman.
Unbelievable.
And they say government doesn't work.
Unbelievable. I mean, that was very well done by John Stewart to put it in the proper perspective. But think about that. I mean, you had 30 Republicans who voted no. Two of them were our senators here in Arizona, John Kyle and John McCain.
That doesn't surprise me.
Who voted no for this. So, honestly, sit back and think about that for 1 second. What does that say about the modern-day Republican Party, who says they're a Christian party, a pro-family party, but yet when a woman is raped, they want a private contractor who's getting billions of our taxpayer dollars have the ability to put that woman in a container, tell her to shut up for 24 hours, no food, no water, and not seek legal redress in a criminal court.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, well, a little bit of news here from us at Talk Radio News Service. And first of all, we'll start with the D.C. Appellate Court. The president nominated three people today, they are from various backgrounds. One, Patricia Ann Millett. Another person, Cornelia, better known as Nina Pillard. She is a professor at Georgetown. True confessions, I worked with her dad in 1971 and 72 and 1973. And Robert Wilkins from the District of Columbia, also to be retired. Now, the issue is there are eight people on the appellate court, four Republicans, four Democrats. However, there are three available seats. Now, right now, the retired judges, who are, in fact, mainly Republicans, there's five of them, are hearing cases. So they can sway the court's opinions. It is considered the second highest Yes. court in the land. So it's a very important court. The president said that he does not, as I said, pack in the court. He wants to simply fill the free seats. Also, sexual assault hearings in the Senate Armed Services Committee. The chiefs, they were Chief of Staff Dempsey, General Dempsey, Chief of Staff Ordinaro, I can never pronounce his name correctly, he's the Army Chief of Staff. They said that they are against moving investigations to the JAG Corps prosecutors and away from the chain of command because military chain of command is very important to maintain. Senator Gillibrand said not every commander can decipher between a slap on the rear end, she used a different word, and rape. It promises to be very contentious. There have been seven bills filed on this. Don't know exactly where she will be going. Frank Lautenberg died yesterday. He was the senator from New Jersey. I loved him. I remember him telling me one time, I said something about Senator Lautenberg, and I said an election coming up, and he said, Ellen, when I first ran for Senate, I was told I was feeling kind of bad for my opponent. And the guy that was advising me said, you keep your boot on his neck until election day, and then you can let it off. So he was a tough cookie, but a very gentle one. He will be buried in Arlington Cemetery. He was the oldest or the only surviving World War II veteran in the United States Senate. His service will be tomorrow in New York City. But burial at Arlington Cemetery on Friday. Also, secret emails, and this has been a big problem. The White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said he downplayed any issue that political appointees were using secret government email accounts for internal use. The Associated Press reported today that the Environmental Protection Agency employed a second email address to separate internal messages from overflowing their public accounts. It raised questions about whether government officials were using separate secret accounts to avoid public records. Today, Jay Carney said that all of these secondary accounts, which many of us maintain, were in fact open for Freedom of Information Act, better known as FOIA. What we're not sure about is how many FOIA requests were turned down. National Security Archive is someone, one of the groups that is actually trying to figure that out as we speak.
Now,
Syria. The White House said that despite a United Nations report on Syria that chemical weapons were used, that the Syrian government they're not sure that they have used them, the White House. White House is saying, just as they have said all along, we need more information. The president, as you know, has drawn quite a bit of fire for his position on Syria. Am I supposed to be hearing something? I'm hearing nothing. So tell me when to stop here. The IRS hearings happened today. Several people told their stories. The National Organization of Marriage, John Eastman, he testified. He said the IRS leaked donor information to the Human Rights Campaign. There we go. All right. But I actually believe, and this is Ellen's opinion, that all donor information ought to be out there. Okay, now I can hear.
Can you hear us? All right, Ellen, there you have it. It's Dr. Mike Newcomb here. How are you there?
Hi, Dr. Newcomb.
Yeah, I didn't hear you there initially. So, hey, have you heard any updates on those Senate hearings with respect to the military and the sexual assault?
Yeah, I just talked about that. You had the Senate brass, military brass saying it should go up the chain of command. Senator Gillibrand basically saying, how do you determine what's a pat on the rear and what's a rape? These guys have not been so clear. And this is going to be the sticking point with this legislation, I'm afraid, given their total objection that we're not going to see Gillibrand's legislation and the wish that it goes through the JAG choir go up the chain of command.
Yeah, some people are saying that it's not going to be this Congress, the next Congress, or the next Congress before there's meaningful change. Why the delay on something like this?
The delay is you have an entrenched military system, and these guys do not want to give up control. And there is going to have to be, you know, I think the people are forgetting, my brother Michael Ratner told me about this, there's something called the statute 1983, not done in 1983, it was actually done before that, maybe. But in any case, it means that if somebody interferes with your civil rights, you can sue them personally. Now, that is a federal employee. I don't know if it goes to the military, but we are going to have to see some woman who went up the chain of command, was denied her rights, and people get behind it. And that's what's going to need to happen in order to have meaningful change.
Yeah, no doubt about it. What else is happening out there, Ellen?
Okay, so the IRS hearings, now that they're pretty interesting. And as I said, John Eastman has testified that somehow his donor list was leaked to the Human Rights Campaign Fund. Well, why aren't we putting all 501c3s donor lists? Listen, if you give to a political campaign and you give above $250, anybody can look up and see how much you donated to.
It's public knowledge.
Why don't we do that with nonprofit tax-exempt corporations?
Ellen, I agree with you 100%. Listen, we're going up to a break right now, but we appreciate your time as always, Ellen.
Thank
it's Ellen
you.
Ratner with Talk Radio News Service. We'll be back at the top of the hour with more of the Tom Hartman program. Stay tuned.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Okay, welcome back to hour number three. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, and we have another special guest on the line, Ethan Nadelman. He's the Executive Director of Drug Policy Alliance, and you just heard Jim Javinski also talking about how doctors are now saying, about the majority of the doctors are willing to prescribe medical marijuana. So without further ado, let's get to Ethan. Ethan, welcome to the table.
Thanks for having me on, Mike. It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you here. Yeah, so there's a poll out here that said roughly 76% of United States doctors and roughly 78% of international doctors, if given a hypothetical situation of a woman in her late 60s and had deteriorating cancer, would they prescribe medical marijuana? And the answer to that was a resounding yes, and I myself am a geriatric physician, and I'm probably in that 78% as well. So given that backdrop, Ethan, what's the problem here? Why can't doctors prescribe this?
Well, you know, I mean, part of it, the fact is just essentially the federal government refuses to make any effort to acknowledge all this. I mean, there's now 18 states that have legalized medical marijuana with the doctor's recommendation. Two more are likely to do so in the next month or two. There's probably 1.5 to 2 million Americans who now have a legal medical marijuana ID card issued by their state or local authority or else a physician's recommendation. You have thousands of dispensaries in California, Colorado, many other states. You have states regulating this stuff, but somehow Washington, D.C. is stuck. The Congress is not willing to move. The Obama administration has been, you know, not especially, it's been neither aggressive nor helpful. The biggest problem has been the Republicans in the Congress, who are remain adamant in not providing any room here, as well as the lack of leadership by most of the Democrats in the Congress.
But let me ask you this, with respect to the president and the Department of Justice, right now, obviously, as you said, more and more states are saying, guess what, you know, not only do we agree with medical marijuana, you have states now like Colorado who are decriminalizing even, you know, small possession of marijuana. So why is it that the president has not openly come out or the Department of Justice and said, look, we're going to recognize these state laws. We're going to recognize the state laws. We're not going to have the threat or the fear of federal government coming down heavy on these dispensaries and locking people up and prosecuting for federal crimes. Don't we need that leadership to come from the Department of Justice and the president?
Great question. I mean, I'll tell you, there's a few parts to this, right? The first one is that there's been a remarkably rapid shift in public opinion in the United States on the issue of legally regulating marijuana like alcohol. So the Gallup polling organization has been asking the same question for decades, which is, do you support legalizing marijuana use? And in 2006, I think it was, you had 36% of Americans saying yes and 60% no, and that 36% was the highest ever. Now you have like 52% of Americans saying yes, only 46%, I think, of Americans against. So you've had a 16-point jump in support, a 16-point decline in opposition, a total 32-point swing in public opinion in the last 6 years, which more or less is exactly the same shift of a public opinion as we've seen on gay marriage. So there's this very rapid shift in public opinion. Then you have Colorado and Washington State last November voting not just to decriminalize small amounts of marijuana, but actually to make it legal, to legally regulate like alcohol. So anybody can possess up to an ounce. People in Colorado can grow their own. And the states are now moving forward with setting up state regulatory bodies. And I'll tell you this, Mike, we are in the next few years going to see other states doing much the same thing. So your question then, what about the feds? What can the feds do? Well, the problem for the White House and the Justice Department is that all of this is still illegal under federal law.
Right.
And the president and the attorney general cannot, under federal law, forbid a local U.S. attorney from enforcing federal law. I mean, remember, Bush got in trouble for trying to do something like that. So all that Holder and Obama can do is to say, look, we respect what Washington and Colorado have done. We'd like to find a way to make this work. But what they're not allowed to do is to order federal prosecutors not to go after this. What they can do is to say this is no longer a priority of this administration. So this is very much a nuanced area. And I think the fact that Holder has been saying, I'll come out with my new policy next week, he's been saying that for months. And then when he was finally asked last month by in Congress, what are you going to do here? And he didn't say, well, it's all illegal under federal law. What he said is, the federal government's going to make our policy based upon protecting kids, fighting organized crime, and reducing violence. And from my perspective, that's good news. Because when Holder says that we're going to make our marijuana legalization decisions based upon how it affects kids, organized crime, and violence, that's the right criteria. So I'm not ready to, you know, one can condemn the Obama administration for not having bolder leadership, but it's very rare for a White House to lead on a controversial social issue like this.
Yeah,
so I'm kind of happy that they're being on the fence, and I'm a little more frustrated right now by Congress and some of the local U.S. attorneys who are being real with this stuff.
Oh, well, get that out of there. I can't say that. But
excuse me.
Yes, but in any case, Eric, you got that, right? All right, but listen – all right, good. So the other issue, though, with respect to this, too, is that a lot of the opponents are saying, well, there's no proven medical studies that could show that marijuana has actual salutary effects. For instance, you know, relieving pain and easing nausea and promoting appetite stimulation. What about that? What do you know about that?
Mike, actually, you know, in a way, the people who say that, it's just kind of divorced from any sort of reality. What you had is recently the DEA saying that there are not the sorts of double-blind controlled studies that we normally want to have the FDA using. But in point of fact, what you see is the pharmaceutical companies are investing in this big time. There's a huge explosion in scientific research into the medical benefits of marijuana. Almost nobody now denies that marijuana can be very effective in reducing pain and nausea and other sorts of musculoskeletal symptoms and all this sort of stuff. And there may, more and more realization that it may be effective not just in reducing pain and nausea and things like that, but even in terms of guarding against, like, cancers and things like that.
We're
moving forward on this.
Great. All right, listen, Ethan, we appreciate your time. It's Ethan Nadelman. He's with it. You can check it out on www.drugpolicy.org. And, Ethan, thank you so much. We're going to open it up to the audience right now, and we appreciate your perspective on this.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, sir. Okay, so that's Ethan Nadelman. But I want to open up the Frieda lines here at 1-866-987-THOM. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466 because we've got a lot of people wanting to weigh in with the thoughts on many of the issues that we've discussed today. So let's go first to John on the line from Pasco, Washington, and he has a comment he'd like to make or a question. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, real quick, like our Supreme Court – the other day said the reason they voted for the DNA on people just arrested was that it was too much, it was just like fingerprints. And I just had a big disagreement with that because, you know, if your fingerprint is found in a house or on a floor or wall or in a car, you were in that house or car. But if your DNA is found someplace, that doesn't mean you were there. That means you were there or someone else transferred your DNA. We throw away pop cans, cigarette butts. Sometimes we have unprotected sex. We don't discard things correctly.
Right.
There's a lot of ways our DNA could get there, and I think they should have a warrant for us people that have never been convicted of a felon. Now, I'm for felons giving their DNA. No problem with that. I think it's a good law enforcement tool. But really, for the rest of society, I think there should be a warrant involved.
Yeah, no, and John, you bring up some excellent points there because if you really think about what you just said, it's very easy to leave traces of your DNA behind in the many ways that you just spoke about. So I agree 100% that kind of evidence is not necessarily incriminating because you could be framed, right? You could be set up very easily by taking somebody's hair, by taking, like you said, a discarded condom, if you will, and using that to plant evidence somewhere. So point well taken. So, John, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. It's John Cullen from Pasco, Washington. Listen, when we get back, we'll get back to the Frieda lines at 1-866-987-THOM. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466. Still got Harvey on the line from Berkeley, Pat from Chicago, Marco from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Pat from the Dells, Oregon, North Carolina, Leonard, Catherine from Wisconsin. I mean, it goes on, Nevada, Iowa. We'll be back. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in here right now live. Let's get to some of the Frieda lines right now as we speak. Let's go next to Leonard on the line from Free Speech, and he is in North Carolina. Leonard, welcome to the table.
Yeah.
Hey, Leonard.
Hello. Hello. Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind today?
I had a question on the I wanted to know how does the new DNA law not circumvent the right not to be compelled to testify or to give evidence against yourself? And the second part of that was, you know, like fingerprints, you can get your DNA back or your fingerprints back. Can you get your DNA back or return if you are exonerated?
Yeah, well, look, it's an interesting question here, Leonard, and I'll just take your answer off the air here. But as far as the Fifth Amendment's concerned, you're right. You don't have to necessarily incriminate yourself. You have a right to remain silent. You have a right to a lawyer. You have a right not to say anything whatsoever. Now, that's a little bit different, though, than the Fourth Amendment, and Michael Rischler would have been the ideal guy to ask this question to since he is the expert on these issues. So the Fourth Amendment prohibits unreasonable search and seizure, okay? And you have to get a warrant, you have to have probable cause, etc. With respect to the Fifth Amendment, though, from my understanding, Eric, it's more like you can't say anything that's going to incriminate you. It has nothing to do with getting evidence. If there's a crime that's committed and the police have right to collect evidence, but you just – that's under the Fourth Amendment, but under the Fifth Amendment, you don't have to tell the police anything that can or would be used against you in a court of law. So I think there's a little distinction there between the Fourth and the Fifth. So hopefully that answers your question. All right, look, let's get to other callers right now. Let's go to Jay. He's calling in from Naperville, Illinois, WCPT, and wants to weigh in on the military investigation under the Senate hearings with respect to military assaults, sexual assaults, I should say. Jay, welcome to the table.
Hey, how you doing? I hope you guys are ready then. You slotted me pretty fast. It's a hot topic. I'm a former Marine calling in. And let me just say this. I'm going to come right out and say it. This is due to the admittance of gays in the military. The stats are there. I've looked them up. The increase on male assault's gone up over 20% in the last year. So let's look at this, and let's look at the court-martialing of those who proselytize about being Christians in the Marine Corps or any branch of the military at the same time. So there's an agenda here, folks. Why is this agenda being perpetrated? Why does the 1% command so much? I think these are the issues here. No one in the military, they're embarrassed. They don't want to own up to it. So let's talk about that.
All right, well, Jay, let's talk about it because you've made some interesting allegations there. So first of all, are you saying the reason that there are 70 sexual assaults every day now in the military and the overwhelming majority of them conducted against females, you're saying that because gays are in the military now, that's the reason?
Let's not quit the stats and let's review the whole. Let's not parse and let's not be persnickety and pick certain – you know, little stats to benefit that, you know, you would accuse a Christian of doing that with biblical verse. Let's look at the whole. The stats are there that show that male, there's a wave of gay assault. You can find it.
Right.
It's as of this year. So that's what I'm talking about.
Well, no one's disagreeing with you. Sexual assault is a sexual assault, whether it's a man on a man, a woman on a woman, or a woman on a woman. Regardless, it's a sexual assault. So I don't think anyone's disputing.
But he's saying it's all gay people that are raping.
But you're saying that it's overwhelming majority gay assaults, not heterosexual assaults.
I looked it up. How did you look it up?
Is that in Wikipedia?
I searched the topic. I found a radio station that had an article. I found it in several places.
Fox News?
Gay rape in the military, and all kinds of stuff comes up. All the stats are there. So,
all right, well, look, regardless of what it is, I think I would hope as a former Marine, if it's happening and it's widespread, you would not want the military commanders to be the ones in charge of determining, you know, what punishment is meted out. Wouldn't you want, if anyone is sexually assaulted in the military, the right to go through a civilian criminal court to prosecute the case?
Absolutely. That's not my debate. But what we're missing here is that there is a crux to this issue and that we need to examine it while at the same time they're going after Christians in the military. So I got a problem with that. Someone needs to air this out. Let's speak for righteousness.
But how are they going out? Christians? Who's going after Christians?
Look that up. This just happened.
I don't want to look it up. You're a former Marine. You're the guy who was in the military.
You're bringing it up.
You tell me. You called the radio show. You tell me. I don't want to look it up.
I'm telling you because you might not take my word for it, but it's there. The status quo, this is true in the military, they can court-martial you if you share Christianity with other fellow service members. So I find that interesting dichotomy between the deviance and sexual assault, and no one wants to investigate the morality of that, and at the same time, we're attacking Christians. So,
wait a minute. Is it just Christianity or any other religion?
Yeah, you're not allowed to proselytize with any religion, you know, whether it's Judaism or Buddhism or, you know, Christianity. I mean, there's a separation between church and state there. I mean, the military is not the place to be.
It was God, country, and core, but apparently that ain't the case anymore.
Yeah, all right.
That's how I was trained.
All right, well, fair enough. Well, listen.
Then your core.
Well, Jay, thank you for your time, and thank you for your perspective, okay?
Thanks,
all right.
Guys.
That's Jay calling from Naperville. I was having a hard time understanding what the connection was, what he was saying. I mean,
well, he's saying that only gays rape in the military. They rape other men, and I mean, that's just ridiculous.
No, I mean,
I'm sure it happens.
I'm sure it does happen.
But, you know, I mean, come on.
But I would almost guarantee you, and I guess we will look it up, I can almost guarantee you that the overwhelming majority of sexual assaults and harassment in the military is not gay assaults, that it's heterosexual.
And then he's saying that everybody's going after Christianity in the military. I'm sure it's not just Christianity.
No. Actually, the problem is that many of the fundamentalist Christians in the military try to proselytize and push their religion on everybody else. Look, if you're going into the military, like he said, it's not God and country you're serving. You're serving your country.
Right.
You know, because if you say, I'm in the military and I'm serving God, then you're no different than the jihadist. You're no different than the radical Islamist. You know, because then you're marrying religion to military and killing, and that's not what this country's about. And if you were taught that way, then I'll have to tell you, brother, you were taught inappropriately. That's not what we're all about.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Broadcasting from 1480 KPHX, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, the Freedom Express Rumble Along here, and Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom. We got a full board of callers, so let's just get to your calls and see what you have to say. Let's go first up to Marco. He's listening on Sirius XM Radio in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Marco, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, and I'm glad you guys don't screen your calls like these supposedly other free shows on airways these days. But the military and the policeman, it's quite clear that we're in not an increasingly police state, but we are in a police state. And to talk about it like it's anything other than that really serves as more of a distraction. It's like Republicans, Democrats, good cops, bad cops, they're both pushing you into a corner, you know, that everybody can see, but we're still debating about. The fact is, these people in the military and the police department are put there to make you feel the weight of the state. Now, we can argue about that, but the facts are clear. They have clear shot to do what they want to do. They can shoot black people 57 times. They can rape Iraqi civilians and Afghani civilians and bomb wedding parties. Nothing is done. It's a murder, slaughter crew. They brain check, they brain scan these people for that to be on hit squads to run through that. We just need to admit that it's an aggression force, and they're there to aggress, shock, and awe the population. To say anything other than that is part of the distraction.
Right. So you think this particular ruling from the Supreme Court of the United States that allows, in essence, law enforcement to take swabs of your DNA from your cheek, it's far-reaching, and it's just another step closer to an all-oppressive Big Brother state, as George Orwell basically wrote about in the novel 1984.
That's right. So you're someone in your family, in your DNA, 100 years ago killed somebody, so we got to arrest everybody in your family. It's for the protection of everybody. And as silly as the population is, listen, man, 85%. 50% of the American population is functional illiterate. All they know is reality TV and WWF. It's a joke. And you're having a hard time getting to these people. They don't know, nor do they care about what you're talking about. Everything is Dave and Buster's.
video games. You have 40-year-old men sitting up 2 o'clock in the morning playing video games.
I know. It's pretty pathetic. All right, listen, Marco, I appreciate your perspective. Thanks for calling into the Tom Hartman program. All right, there you have it. That's Marco from Sirius here. Let's go next to Clint. Clint is calling also on Sirius XM Satellite Radio from Vail, Colorado, and Clint wants to weigh in with some of his thoughts as well. Clint, welcome.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I did have a couple comments, and as far as one to go back, the fellow that called about the gays in the military, I don't know what the connection was there either. That was way off. But
I know. I try to be pretty patient, Clinton, and kind
diplomatic
about it, but I just couldn't get his thread.
No, I couldn't either. And I'm a Republican. I mean, I voted for Ron Paul, so more libertarian, I guess. But to the DNA and the medical marijuana, like I was telling your screener, I said, you know, this is definitely a couple of issues where I think the right and the left can come together, and I think we need to. DNA swabs, it just seems to me, they want to get everybody on paper. And right. The last caller, you know, had some good points about Big Brother and some other things that are going on. Can you tie that in with the benefits of medical marijuana? And like anything else, opiate painkillers or anything, you can't overdo it. But Big Pharma is going to stop medical marijuana. Apparently, you're a doctor, and you can see the influence that the drug companies and the oil companies all have. And I think they're the ones that are going to put the kibosh on any kind of
product. Because there's no patent on marijuana. It's just naturally grown, so they can't get a patent and monopolize the actual revenue stream for that.
Exactly. Monsanto will.
Right.
And that's, you know, I just walked into a pot shop up here the other day, and I'm sure there's people listening. They're like, what the hell were you doing in there? But
right.
I went in there and I said, so can I just, because we're in Colorado, we legalize it.
Right.
Said, can I buy just whatever I want? And they said, well, not yet. They have not figured out the tax structure and how
correct.
That's going to work. And I just found that very interesting that they're going to want their hands on it already. So when you tie that into some of what the IRS may be doing to regulate Obamacare and the medical marijuana, I think you're going to see more influence from Big Pharma. And if you look at the issues with Monsanto and the crops, and I think both sides, right and left, need to come together on these issues and say, wait a minute. We see what's going on, folks. Let's take a stand here. So,
no, I hear you, Clint. Well, listen, I appreciate it. And just so the listeners know, as a point of disclosure, Clint, you are a Republican, so you're saying that we can find some common ground.
I agree. Thank you.
All right, brother. Thank you. That's Clint there from Vail, Colorado, opening up another Freedom Line here at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's go next to Dana. Dana's calling from Marcing, Idaho, I believe, and she wants to comment on the rape issue in the military. So, Dana, welcome to the table here.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. So what are your thoughts on this? It's nice to hear a woman's perspective on this. We've had a lot of men calling in on this issue today, and I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, I think my comment is about the ignorance that was portrayed by the gentleman or the person that called in that claimed to be a Marine.
Right.
He talks of rape as if it has something to do with sex.
Right.
And rape has nothing to do with sex, and I'm getting very tired of correlating it with sex. It is about power, it's about rage, and it's about control. And from his comment, I would say those that are self-proclaimed Christians that have proselytizing at their heart, some of them could be rapists just because it has nothing to do with sex.
No, and that's what I was trying to reorient him to say that, look, who cares if it's a man assaulting, if it's man on man, woman on woman, or man on woman, it's still an assault. It's still a violation. It's still a crime. It's still an abhorrent thing to do to another human being. But he kept trying to pivot and make it down, like you said, like to a sexual thing or something that had to do with gay individuals and like not like what you're saying, which is it's a violent, horrible crime.
Yes, and John Fugelsang the other night had a couple on that this man was raped 13 years ago in the military. He was a heterosexual, and he is just now recently talking about it. And there's a huge group of men that are now organizing and are going to start talking about the rape heterosexuals perpetrated on males in the military, which is all about dominance, power, and control.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, listen, Dana, thank you for taking time out of your day, and thanks for calling in to the Tom Hartman program. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now. All right. Boy, the phone lines just keep lighting up, Eric. I'm getting flashing green, you know, left and right over here.
Probably it's, after that guy's phone call.
It's just unbelievable. All right, let's go back to the calls. Let's go next to, let me see, who's been holding for quite a while. Let's go to Dave. Dave's calling also from Ankeny, Iowa, cities that I've never even heard of. How are you doing there, Dave?
I'm doing fine. I'm not going to pretend I'm a Marine. I am a Marine. I've been a Marine for 4 years, 74 through 78. And what I have to say is very interesting. First, I'm very insulted that this show is all about men in the military that are raping all the women. There's a lot more that goes on in the military than the raping problems there. You said it yourself. You have a lot of respect for the men in the military, but then you went on and on about how all the men in the military are raping women.
I didn't say all the men. I just said that there is obviously a problem. There's 70 sexual assaults and rapes a day in the military. And it's unfortunately the men who are conducting that.
Are people not listening?
I want you to play your tape back for yourself. When you just got done saying that you respected the men in the military and then you went on from there.
I didn't say I respect the men in the military. I respect the people in the military, men and women.
This gentleman is not listening, Mike.
Let me tell you where this all base come from.
Mm-hmm.
When we started with women in the military, back in World War II, it was fine. They had special jobs for them. It was great. When we started putting women in other areas and the military commander said, it's going to affect the cohesive unit, that we're going to have problems.
Right.
I saw it myself in 74 through 78. I had a woman come into the military, into our section, so they could say that there was one in there. It was the biggest joke I ever saw.
Now, why was it a joke?
Well, first, we had to walk on eggshells as not to offend her. Secondly, the commander of the battalion had to give up his restroom so she could have one. Then they had to take a jeep and a driver to escort her like a bodyguard back and forth to where she resided and then back to where we were. Every month we'd go out on exercises.
Yeah, and do you realize the reason you had to do that because of the discrimination on behalf of males that didn't allow women in the military equality, the ability to serve equally? That's why you had to go through that. Had there been equality, you wouldn't have to do that.
And you shouldn't want to offend her in the first place. You don't have to walk on eggshells.
Right.
That's just how you're supposed
to be. Aren't you supposed to act professionally as a Marine? I mean, why would you have to walk on eggshells?
Because we're told that you couldn't even possibly say anything to her. Because if she mentioned anything about anything, you could be in trouble.
Wow. First it's the gays' fault. Now it's the women's fault.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate the call. I'm beginning to wonder if these are the fiercest warriors out there on God's earth. I mean, you have a female Marine and you have to walk on eggshells? God help us. If that's what our military's made up of, God help us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb, sitting in, Semper Fi. All righty, welcome back. This is the final segment for today, the Freedom Express, pulling up to the final stop, the final destination. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today, and also we'll be back on Thursday as well. The Freedom Lines are open at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. So let's go next to, let's try a pharmacist. We got a pharmacist on the line from Lancaster, California. Name is Dan, listening on KABQ. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, how you doing there? On the subject of marijuana, of course, we already have Durandabol that helps with the nausea, which is a marijuana derivative, and that's already a prescription drug. Mm-hmm. So we know it does some, helps with some nausea and even used in some cancer patients.
Sure.
But with the problem with the marijuana, and I'm sure you know this, is you got the FDA saying no, and you got some states saying yes.
Correct.
You don't have any standards yet for, the FDA always requires double-blind controlled studies. I think that was mentioned before. you do have some of that out there. In fact, I had a pharmacology professor that was doing stuff. Well, he was doing bell jar mice studies when I was in school. But the other thing is you have to standardize that stuff so it doesn't get into that.
But isn't it because the way that the feds have classified as class one that they can't, you can't perform, you can't perform any studies on that?
No, it'll drop to class two.
Right.
Right. So if it's class two, no, you can still do, no, you could still through the government.
Hasn't it been studied enough?
No, but what he's talking about are actual, like, formal studies.
Right, I'm
that,
just kidding.
You
I was
know,
making
you
light
know.
Of the people. Who's
yeah, the people have studied it. There's been lots of, you know, people have looked at it. But let me ask you this. As a pharmacist, I mean, you know, you talked about the Dropinol. Obviously, look, we know it's a chemical, or we know what the active chemical is in the cannabis sativa. I mean, what's the big hoopla about it? I mean, why are we making a big...
No. Well, let me explain. The thing is that we don't want it to fall into a loophole like tonight. I think it was the Food and Drug Act in 1994, was it 1996, mm-hmm. where you don't have any standardization. So the government's going to have to standardize, you know, the elements that are in there. Secondly, we know that it has, it's not a temporary, but it's somewhat semi-permanent or permanent effect on cognitive abilities. We know it doubles the risk for stroke. So just like any other drug, it's going to have to be licensed by the FDA, and maybe probably generic manufacturers will make it. But, you know, all just like any other drug, it has to be presented, and it does just like any narcotic.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone's averse to that, and I think
I'm just – but you know, too, that just for the case of the nausea properties, if you just take that for a second, there are some very, very potent meds out there, but they're mm-hmm. mostly for acute care. They're IV meds.
Right.
Like Amanda, the ones that are used for chemo. But still, as an outpatient, you can use Tyrannobol and that kind of thing. But I'm just trying to say that we just can't, oh, yeah, it's legalized, you know.
No. I know. Yeah, we understand that. You have to go through the same rules and regulations that you go through with the other stuff. All right, well, listen, I appreciate your perspective. I'm going to get the other calls, shortened segment here. So thank you, Dan. It's Dan, the pharmacist from Lancaster, California. Let's go next to Pat. Pat's calling from the Dells in Oregon and listening on Free Speech. Pat, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, my phone's dying, but I'll try to make this quick. Can you hear it beeping?
Yes.
Yeah.
As long as it's a phone and not like a pacemaker or something.
No. No. But anyway, I agree that rape is a power trip. But also, you know, when I was a kid, way back when, I'm 83. The churches taught the girls, you know, that they were supposed to be chaste and all this kind of thing, and
right.
you know, and walk carefully, and among the sharks. And the boys were not taught anything at all. So they were regarded as, you know, not in control of themselves. And so, you know, when girls got raped, you know, it was unfortunate, and they never did anything about it, you know.
Right.
Except there was one farmer who had a mentally challenged son, and he tried to mount a gal who was pulling carrots out in the garden. And he took him down and castrated him. But
oh, wow.
That's the only case I know of where anything was really done, you know. And the attitude comes directly from the churches. I find them in fault because that's the way they teach the girls. And, you know, they also have these father-daughter balls, you know, about abstinence and so forth. Have you ever seen a mother-son ball about abstinence?
No, you don't really see a whole lot of mother-son balls at all. But listen, Pat, I appreciate you holding on in your patience, and I hear your phone's dying, so thank you for your perspective. And we always appreciate the wisdom of somebody in their 80s, so thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. There you have it. I feel bad. I had her on hold for that long time, and now her phone's,
that's why your phone's dead,
ready to die there. All right. Let me see. Let's go on next. Let's try Barbara, and she's calling in from Fresno, California. Barbara, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, Dr. Newcomb. I just happened to hear Book TV last night, and this historian was talking about World War II, and some guy calls in, and he says, well, he said, you know, the Army is such an honorable institution, made of such an honorable man, and, you know, I can't understand why the media is talking about rape in this institution. And I thought, oh, he means
the liberal media, right?
Right. Well, let me tell you something. It very well might be an honorable institution, but based off of the Senate hearings and the fact that there's 70 sexual assaults every day in the military, and then if the two Marines are any indication today who called into this program, one saying that women, you have to walk on eggshells. And
one was blaming gays
and the other guy was blaming women. I don't know how honorable that really is. I mean, if that's what's happening in the military and they look at women and homosexuals as subservient or inferior or, you know, devils, you know, out there, deviants, I'm not so sure that that's very honorable. But listen, Barb, I got to run, so I appreciate the call. Thank you. Okay, there you have it. All right, well, listen, we will be back on Thursday filling in for Tom then. But as always, we appreciate everybody who participates in the program, whether you're from the left or the right or somewhere in between. It doesn't matter. You always get a say on the Tom Hartman program. So as Tom always says, democracy is a participatory sport. So guess what? Tag, you're it.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.